And shall we read the Bible together? Let's read these verses together. Joshua and all the Israelites went to the Jordan, where they camped, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the Levitical priests carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and the ark. Do not go near it. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. So that's the passage that my mind was taken to. And as I looked at that passage, I just thought there are some words that I'll bring to help. Hope perhaps we can have these words and these thoughts as we come to worship the Lord. So I'm just literally going to note them. It's not a Bible study, but just some notes. I put some words I want to bring. I put the word courage there, although courage isn't particularly in that passage. Many times the Lord said through Joshua and Joshua to the people, be courageous, didn't he? Take courage. And so I've included that word. I'm just going to create a small list of words here for us to think about and hopefully inspire our worship. But from this passage, a sense of expectation. Joshua and all the Israelites went to the Jordan where they camped before crossing over. Welcome back, Barry, from your lovely trip. You look dreadful. But you know, I often think, how do you lot sleep the night before you fly somewhere? Do you all sleep well?
No.
I don't. I'm awake every hour thinking, what's the time? Have I got my passport? Have I got, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's that sense of expectation. And the people of Israel were camped on the Jordan riverside and just about to cross over. And they must have had that sense of expectation about what was about to happen. And then readiness. Joshua sent these officers saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, in other words, be ready. Be ready. You've got to keep an eye on the priests, on the Levites. Be ready. We're told, aren't we, in the Gospels, Jesus says we've got to be ready for his second coming. We've got to be alert. But we've also got to be ready today for the next thing that God is wanting us to do. So a sense of expectation and a sense of readiness about the journey that we're on. And then, of course, obedience, because they weren't just to sit there and look for the priests and say, oh, yes, the priests are moving. Because when they saw the priests, the command was to move out from their positions. And so we've got to be obedient when we see the Lord move as well. And when the Lord gives us a command or gives us some direction, we've got to be ready too. Expectation, readiness, obedience, and assurance. There's nothing like knowing that the Lord is with us. I was thinking of Matthew 28 again, in the very last verse of Matthew 28. And behold, I will be with you. Surely I will be with you to the very end of the age. Isn't that assuring? And God in this verse promises he'll be with us. He says, because then if you follow the ark, which is the carrying the presence of God, then you will know which way to go. Since you've never been here before, who loves traveling? Who loves going to places they've never experienced before? It's an adventure. And then Captain Allen wrote a song, It's an Adventure Following Jesus, didn't it? It's a terrible song. But anyway, there you are. It's a great song. It's a great song. But anyway, God is going to lead us. He's going to lead us to places where we've never been before. Isn't that exciting?
No, it's terrifying.
I know, but it's exciting too. So there's a sense of assurance in this passage as well. And also, this is a very interesting verse. Because it says, the command is, keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits between you and God. The ark, of course, was the place that represented the presence of God in the midst of his people. And here they're told to keep 2,000 cubits, not that far. But I want to say, but I want to remain close to God. And actually, the good news is this, that in the New Testament, we're able to keep close to God. In fact, the invitation is draw near to me and I'll draw near to you. But the point of this is that they were, the ark was went ahead of them, and they were to keep their eyes on it. Because if the ark went to the left, they were going to have to go to the left. Or if it went to the right, they were going to have to go to the right. So I put there, keep close. Keep close. We've got to keep close to God. We've got to keep close to God individually, but also collectively. Keep close. And then consecration. Jesus told the people, consecrate yourselves. In other words, dedicate yourselves to God's purpose. We're not here to please ourselves. We're here to please God. And I think that's a wonderful command. And we're to consecrate ourselves for the next phase of our life as a church. Are we dedicated to God? Wholly dedicated to the Lord. And because lastly is the promise. The promise of God. Tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Hands up if you want God to do amazing things amongst us. Peer pressure. Peer pressure. It's a great thing. But I hope that's true for all of us. That actually we want God to do amazing things amongst us. I don't want to be a bored Christian. The thing shouldn't exist. I want God to do amazing things. And that's the promise. He will. So as we come to worship this morning, let's be inspired by this amazing passage of Scripture. It's only five or six verses. And it speaks to us about all these things, about courage, God is with us. Expectation, God is going to do something. Readiness, obedience, assurance, God is with us. Keeping close to God. Perhaps in our time of worship now, we're just going to draw near to God. We're going to worship Him. And He says to us, don't take your eyes off me. Don't take your eyes off me. Keep our eyes on Jesus. Consecrated to God. We belong to Him because of His promise. Okay? Let's just have a moment of quiet and then we'll sing. We'll come to God in worship by singing some songs that I've chosen that I hope will be helpful for us to bring our own worship this morning. So a moment of silence. You remember the Choluteca Bridge in Honduras. If you don't remember it, you may not have been here for the last few weeks or so, then it might be worth you just catching up on through our website on what we've been talking about, certainly the first 2 weeks in January. We looked at this bridge, and if you remember, we thought of it in terms of what's happened between church and culture. Just to remind you, the bridge was built, fantastic bridge, but then a storm came and changed the complete direction of the river. So now the bridge is just standing there, not going over anything. We talked about this church and culture and how some of these things here, there were many more, but we just noted a few things about how culture has changed around us in the last 3 to 4 decades. Family has changed, very much so, in all sorts of ways. Attitudes have changed. What is acceptable today would not have been acceptable 40 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever it is. Work patterns have changed. Society's become much more liberal, and there are, I think, good sides of that, and there are not so good sides of that. The gap between rich and poor. I read the other day that the wealthiest 47 people in the world are as wealthy as the 3.7 billion people, poorest people in the world. That's just unjust. That is just not right. And the gap is, what's worse is the gap is becoming greater in countries. There's been technological shifting of society. Technology has changed the way our society operates and relates, and there's good things about that and there are not so good things about that. We don't want to be dinosaurs about any of this. We recognize that some of it is good and some of it isn't. How we communicate with each other Sundays has changed, hasn't it? Sundays has changed a lot, and how community has changed. And then we went on to recognising those shifts, to then asking the question, how have those shifts affected us? How have those shifts affected the church? The church has become much smaller. We'll think about that in a moment. It's made discipleship more challenging because in days gone by, if you went to church every Sunday. That's not the case these days. So it makes discipleship a lot more difficult in a community like this, where, you know, some of the one or other member of the husband or wife team, you know, gets back, leaves very early and gets back very late, and evening meetings are a bit of a drag, or if not impossible. You know, it makes discipleship, the whole process of discipleship, challenging, or we have to address it more differently. Perhaps it's made us insular. Someone said that because so much has gone on out there, somehow the church has retrenched and retracted itself and become insular. It's felt under attack. Because we've known that the society around us has become liberalised, then that's had an effect on the church, where we've been trying to connect with and relate to the community that's becoming more liberal. Some of us have gone down the line of liberalisation as well, so it's affected us in that way. We've lost influence. We used to be at the centre of everything, you know, pre-war. Now that's not the case. Because of various things that have come out in the press, we've lost integrity. Many people think the church is irrelevant and has nothing to do with them. Somebody said the church has been caught napping, and we've stayed the same, which is the point of that picture, is that we've stayed the same while culture has shifted. And I think we agreed that the church, not just this church, I'm talking generically, the church on the whole has become significantly disconnected with the community that we are sent a call to witness to engage with. As I was thinking about this, I thought this picture of Tewkesbury Abbey just in 2007 after the floods, it's a very different picture. But it could convey a similar message of disconnection and isolation. The church on a hill, and there's just been change all around it. The statistics, let me just show you some statistics, which were done by Peter Briley, a Christian researcher. There's some interesting statistics. These were done between 2000 and 2013. Attendance on an Anglican church is down 5%, Methodist church down 15% just in that period, Baptists down 9%, Presbyterians down 20% attendance, Catholics down 13%. That's quite a shift, isn't it, in 13 years or so. There's some challenging. It's not all bad, as we said. There's some good statistics. Have a look at these. Independent churches, attendance on a Sunday is up by 3%. That's interesting. New churches, that's churches that are independent and just springing up in various places, or new churches attached to other existing churches, like these smaller denominations, they're up 9%. That's interesting. Orthodox is up 19%. That's interesting. Pentecostal is up by 21%. That's very interesting. Before we get too excited, isn't that great? There's two things there. One is it's the black church in London, which is growing. It's the fastest growing denomination in the country. And they're doing incredible stuff in central London. And before we get too excited that everybody's turning to Orthodoxy, that 19% increase is put down to people from Eastern Europe coming into our country and going to church. And we certainly witnessed that in Minehead, where our Catholic church doubled its Sunday congregation because of Butlins and all the people that were coming from Eastern Europe to things. So there's some good news there, but we can't get too excited about it. Smaller denominations, these are denominations like New Frontiers they began as house churches. But they have a smaller percentage overall. But they're the ones that are growing. I think what's interesting about those statistics is the ones that are growing are the ones that are seeking that are new, that are seeking to do things differently. So there's good news. There is good news. Next time you hear the bad news, shout at the radio, there's good news too. And not least around the world, although in Western world church attendance is declining rapidly, around the world the church is growing. In fact, I think somebody said, I heard somebody say the other day that there's never been more Christians worshipping Jesus today, as they are now, than there ever have been. So that's, the church is growing. It's just in this country it's a bit of a challenge. You might want to talk about that in a moment. And you can find those statistics by going online to Peter Brierley or Tearfund. Tearfund did a very similar survey, excellent survey, a few years later, and they agreed the statistics were very similar in both surveys. Rather than sit tight, as we discussed last time, and wait for culture to return to us, wait for the river, as it were, to come back under our bridge, which is never going to happen, I think we all understood that we are the ones who need to change in order to reconnect missionally with the people around us. We are the ones who need to develop new wineskins to contain the new wine that God wants to harvest. So the question that I want us to discuss together, I'm going to say a bit more, but hopefully there'll be plenty of time for us to discuss this question together, is this: in what ways might we adapt in order to reconnect missionally with people around us? That's a big question. And we could take it, in what ways might we, here in Seer Green, we need at some point to let the tyre hit the road and say, okay, what does this mean for us? But it also could be the bigger picture. What does the church need to do in order to reconnect missionally with the people around us? I'm sorry that Lou's not here today. You'll remember a couple of weeks ago, she had the last word in our morning gathering. And she so helpfully came with this reflection. She asked this question: how do we live as church? How do we live in the tension between the church being constant and stable and rock-like on the one hand, and the need to keep connected with constantly changing and shifting culture on the other? Do you remember that? Those of you who hear it? She left us with that reflection, which was very helpful. I was so interested, and these things are not coincidence, I'm sure, but I was so interested, as I alluded to at the beginning of the service, just a few days later, I was going through some of the history of the church on our new website, which is going to be launched in a few weeks' time. And I came across this short article, which was written in 1987 by Barry Cheeseman, who was minister of the church then, and a certain church secretary, Colin Walker. I don't know if he's with us this morning. But anyway, and Colin, this is what you wrote, and it's brilliant. It was for the Parish Anniversary magazine, I believe. Colin and Barry wrote this: the church fellowship today, that's us, consists of some 85 members and other regular worshippers who believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and try to demonstrate his love in their daily lives. And then there's this sentence which is most interesting: we attempt, with his help, to be what God is, both steady and reliable and yet ever new and up to date. Isn't that brilliant? 30 years ago, that was written. Well done, Colin. Excellent. Yeah. That so encouraged me when I read this. It's on our new website. You'll all be able to check out whether I've told you a lie or whether I'm telling you the truth, if you don't believe me. But I was so encouraged because, number one, I believe God is speaking to us. If you're still sitting there thinking, why are we doing this? I think it's because God is speaking to us about these things. But secondly, and it is daunting, but it's also, I find it very exciting. But secondly, because it reminds me that those who have gone before us and those who will come after us are wrestling with the same issues. We're wrestling with this issue of how do we remain true to our roots, yet be constantly refreshing ourselves and the way we share the life-transforming message of Jesus to every generation and every context. How are we to be solid and flexible, ancient and modern, historic and contemporary? This is the question. I found this video clip that Colin Pye showed, and we've seen it a couple of times, but it's worth connecting with again, that Colin Pye showed of the Reverend Dr. Michael Moyner. Very interesting, talking about fresh expressions.
I think these new fresh expressions, there are many more than we realise. Some of the research that's been done now into some of the dioceses in Liverpool and Canterbury are showing that. My own experience is exactly the same. I keep bumping into people who are doing and involved in what we would call fresh expressions. They don't call it that. They're right under the radar, but there they are. So I think that there are many more of these new types of church emerging than we realise. I think that's a huge source of hope. But we could see many more if the existing church really wants to get behind it and support it. Big challenge is for existing church. Are they going to really put resources into this? If you don't put resources into something new, no one notices. But if you take away resources from something that already exists in order to put resources into something new, then everyone screams. So it's not surprising that existing church finds it really hard to put resources into these new forms of church. But we need training for the lay leaders of these churches. We need training for the clergy who kind of oversee these churches and link them up. We need resources. There is a huge amount we need to do if we're going to build on what is a grassroots movement. If we don't build on it, I think it'll happen anyway, but it won't happen nearly to the extent. But if we do build on it, then I think we could see a huge revival in the church.
Interesting, isn't it? Thanks, Neil. Michael there in that clip says, there's a big challenge. It's a big challenge. Are we going to put resources into this? Talks about if you don't put resources into something new, no one notices. If you take away resources from something which already exists in order to put resources into something new, then everybody screams. So it's not surprising that we as church, established church, find this difficult and challenging. Recent research, the same research that I started with, suggests, now this is very, very interesting. It suggests that roughly 40% of people in Britain are within reach of the established church. Okay? And in round figures, that is 10% come to church regularly. 10% of our population come to church regularly. At least once a month is the statistic. Another 10% come occasionally, so at various points throughout the year. And 20% used to come and might be open to coming back. And I think this is very interesting because I think God's got something to say for us in this about the people that are in our community that used to come to church and no longer do. And I think God is calling us to actually to reconnect with them, with the love of God. So that's very interesting. Now, what about the other? That's 40%. What about the other 60% of our population? The other 60% consists of 20% who used to come and are not open to returning, and that is returning to the established church. Okay, we're not talking here about the new kind of churches, to the established church. And 40% who've never been part of the church and are not open to coming. All right, they're quite they're just not knowledgeable, or they see that the established church is irrelevant, and that percentage is growing. So it's not decreasing. As generation succeeds generation, that percentage is growing. It is a massive challenge, and it always has been. And one of you last week, or last time, came up to me, I think very enthused by what we'd been talking about, but also slightly terrified. And they said to me, Andy, you do have the answers, don't you? And I said, no, I don't have the answers. But I know someone who does. Barry. Michael, on the video, talked about fresh expressions of church. And let me share with you some good news of churches around the place that have got on with it. Fresh expressions in the church. Now, of course, it starts with a much smaller number, so percentages are going to look much bigger. But actually, those attending a fresh expression of church in this country in that 13-year period has gone up by 273%. And I was going to say new bums on seats. You know what I'm trying to say. Those are new disciples of Jesus. Isn't that fantastic? Is that encouraging? I think it's very encouraging. Between 2004 and 2012, 2,000 fresh expressions of church were formed in the UK across the denominations. Isn't that brilliant? A fresh expression of church, just in case you're wondering, is this: a form of church for our changing culture, which is established primarily for the benefit of people who are not members of any church. Okay? That's an important definition. It's a new church for new people. A fresh expression is intended to be precisely that. And listen to this carefully, because I always find myself slipping back into this mode, whereas actually I've got to remember it's not. A fresh expression is intended to be precisely that, a fresh expression of church. Not just renewed worship, not just imaginative mission, not just creative youth work, which are all important and essential and necessary, but a fresh expression of church, a new way of doing church, a new church for new people. Let's just watch this video. You, we don't have a mission. The mission is God's. It was God's desire, long before it became your desire or mine, that everyone in the world should know that they are loved by Him and are able to be reconciled into a loving relationship with Him. It's God's mission. That's His desire. He has given us a command, a commission. And all we have to do is discover how we can fulfill that commission as effectively as possible today and then get on and do it. Simple. Rowan Williams, former Archbishop of Canterbury from 2002 to 2012, who was the first to raise the concept of fresh expressions, also coined this phrase, which I think is an important phrase. Remember this phrase: a mixed economy church. And what he meant by this was a church like ours, or a network of churches in the area, which develops new ways of being church alongside more traditional forms of church. Remember, researchers suggest that around 30 to 40% of our population, including some who don't go to church, connect with traditional form of church. His successor, Justin Welby, also talked about
mixed economy is essential.
Mixed economy.
Because it gives the balance between what Benedict called stability, a location in place and nature, with the catalyst of an openness to the Spirit of God doing new things. And we need both. Without stability, you end up just following fashion. And Benedict knew that very well. And without the catalyst of the Spirit, you end up just becoming utterly embedded and unable to move in what you've always done.
Sorry about that screaming in the background. I don't know what was going on there. But and so he raises again this balance between stability and the new thing that the Holy Spirit is doing. And this idea of mixed economy, it's really important. What we are not discussing here is about chucking out the old. Because 30 to 40% of people in our country still connect with it and find it helpful. And some of those are not people in church on a regular basis. But the challenge is this. We need to learn to be a both and church. Realizing that for many of us and for other people in our communities, the familiar form of church is helpful, but alongside that, new forms of church and mission are necessary to meet a new context that existing forms of church don't reach. Okay? So, time to discuss. In what ways might we adapt in order to reconnect missionally with the people around us? I hope I've given you some food for thought to take into this discussion. What I'd love you to do is stand up, grab a chair, and form maybe groups of six or seven or eight in the room. If you want to go into the out there and talk, you're very welcome to do that. But we're going to take about 15 minutes or maybe 10 minutes between. We'll see how it goes. I would like to you to discuss this. In what ways might we adapt as Seer Green Baptist Church, or as the church generally, in what ways might we adapt in order to reconnect missionally with people around us? That's the million-dollar question. Okay? So if you're happy, if you're not, you're very welcome to remain where you are, remain seated and think about it yourself. You're very welcome, but I find discussing it very good. And can I ask, please, that no one particular person in the group dominates the discussion. The whole point of this is to hear what other people are saying. Okay? So if you'd like to just move the furniture, get into groups, 10 minutes at least. And if someone's got a pen and paper and could make notes so that we can feed back, that would be great. Can I say this is not the only time we're going to meet together to talk about this? If we come to the conclusion as a church that something's got to happen, we've got to change the way we do church and the way we do our mission in the village, then we'll have times and conversations together. This is just to get us hopefully stimulated, thinking about our practice, what we do, how we do it, and is it the right way for the future? So Martin is kindly going to run around with the microphone, Linda, if that's all right. And if we can keep our responses brief, again, if you've got lots of responses and want to write them down, that'll be great. This is just to get a snapshot of some of the conversations that we were having. So if someone's already said something, don't repeat it, but bring something new. Okay? So who's going to kick us off? Someone who doesn't normally. Lucy, lovely. Oh, have you heard you've heard the joke about Baptists changing light bulbs, haven't you? Yeah. Change? Don't be serious. Right. Okay. Lucy.
Okay. We discussed that we should make the church more attractive.
Okay.
And lively.
Okay. Now, what do you mean by the church? Are you talking about us in making me more attractive? Yeah. Amen.
No.
Yeah. Those in favour? Yeah. Yeah. My wife's got two hands up. She can't wait for this transformation. Okay. It's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, and two legs as well. No. Fantastic. So,
what I mean is this, is that we should make the way of our worship, the way of our service more attractive and lively, not that we make it lightly, but we are at the same time, we won't compromise our faith. For example, in Pentecostal churches, they attract youths.
Yes.
By making their worship more lively and attractive.
Yes.
They sing.
Yes.
They dance.
Yes.
So you see, so for example, some youth, they like going to discos.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
If in the church, they can dance, they can clap.
Yeah.
Some of them say, okay, let us just go and see them.
Yeah.
What are they doing there?
Yeah.
Thereby, when they come, they may not think of being converted.
Okay.
But when they enter,
yeah.
When they join,
yeah.
You see, okay. By one way or the other, they are converted and they are useful to God.
Lovely. That's a fantastic contribution from Lucy, and there's no doubt at all that churches need to be renewed in all of these ways. And if we're not renewed, what did Colin say, by 2030 or something, we won't exist. So
we should get out of 28th century. We should be like
21st century.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Now, someone else, please. Someone from, that's over here, Nina. Thank you, Lucy. That was a brilliant contribution.
I think on that same theme, we were talking about attractiveness, but also particularly the building, maybe.
Okay.
That the sort of changes we've been talking about, the phase two,
yeah.
And the frontage of the building and so on. I think that goes hand in hand with making ourselves more attractive.
Yeah.
To the local community.
Yeah.
And also perhaps even, we were saying, a name change, because there's a feeling that even the name Baptist, some people still think of it as a sort of a cult or something. It's so outdated, but it seems to be out there.
Oh, it's definitely out there.
And We had various other things to do.
Can I say there's nothing wrong with being a Baptist? I am a Baptist, and a convinced and theological, doctrinally, I'm Baptist. And there's nothing wrong in that. But the word has got lots hanging on it, and not always helpful. Where's the microphone gone? Okay, one more. Yes?
We were just talking to you about not being too predictable in our services, which I think we're starting to do anyway. We're doing things differently. But not coming every week and having the same thing, which is so spontaneity.
We can do, Hilary, can't we? We can do planned spontaneity really well. Yeah. Okay, someone over here who hasn't spoken. Oh, sorry. Can I go over here? Can I go this way, Martin? And then we'll keep the room free. Neil's on the edge of his seat. He might want to say something as well. But Chris?
Well, we went back to basics and said, what is a service?
Okay.
What is a service? And what is mission?
Yeah. Oh, good question.
Really? Perhaps this needs further definition to move us on a bit. And also, Sue especially said, where does technology fit in?
What do you mean by that? What do you mean? That's a question I want to comment. What do you mean? There's the microphone, Sue, right behind you.
Oh, I just think that social media and technology and everything, it's just so massive in everybody's lives. We can't be the one place where it isn't featuring in some way. I'm not a young person and fully conversant with it, but, you know, they put all messages round and they do this and all that.
Brilliant. Thank you. Can we come over to this team and then we'll come to Linda in the middle? So I think it was Flavia.
No, I'd just like to compliment. We didn't discuss the service itself here, but in terms of the service, according to what they were saying, I believe that society has, in big companies, have changed from paramed to a more round system.
Okay, so,
But church didn't.
Okay, so, it's hierarchy versus... Yeah?
So there's still a need for hierarchy, but
but not, do you see, not where people cannot participate?
Yeah.
Whereas before, if I'm not mistaken...
Microphone.
When Jesus used to read the scrolls,
yeah.
They were in a round, and everybody had a go as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, well,
and discussion.
Absolutely.
There was no
hierarchy.
Yeah, hierarchy, yeah.
I put hierarchy and informality
but
here.
We didn't discuss this.
It's not a clever word, but but I think we know what that means. Sorry you can't read this, but Chris, are you going to say something?
Yeah, I think just going back to the original point, I think we're trying to make this link between them and us. Or
okay.
It's not really them, but no. We're trying to make the link and make it inviting.
Yeah.
You, in terms of attractiveness.
Oh, you're calling me attractive?
No, I'm just saying. I was with someone after Who Let the Dads Out, which I didn't really realise. Jan has just told me it's taken 4 years to get from 4 dads to yesterday 23 dads,
yeah.
Which is a huge effort,
yeah.
Which is brilliant. And yeah. I think a lot of dads come, to be honest, because A, it earns huge amount of brownie points with wives. It gives them Saturday from until pretty much midday on their own.
Yeah.
It sets the tone for the weekend.
Yeah. My wife doesn't like that. She doesn't like it when she's without me for 4 hours.
But the dads know that they can walk through, and whatever their religious or faithful beliefs, it's not going to really be discussed.
Yeah.
And it's not like coming to a church.
Yeah.
And they can just talk about football to the other dads. They can have a coffee and a bacon roll, and they just let the kids tire out. And it's just, I think the church is starting to get there. I went to go to Nathan's house afterwards, give him a lift with his sofa. You were talking to him. He didn't realise until 20 minutes into the conversation of actually who you were.
Oh,
right?
Lord.
So I think... You, in terms of invitingness and attractiveness, you're doing it. Right? You're not there in your cloak and right. No,
you
no,
are. But,
and you, we are talking about the bridge, the gap.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in the fact that you've spoken to someone,
yeah. Okay.
For 20 minutes and he'll not realise, but he's engaging in conversation.
Yeah.
You've got to take a bit of a pat on the back in that.
Oh, thank you.
You are doing it.
Yeah.
Your image, you don't look like a man of the cloth, as someone may say it, right? You don't. So, which is what you've got to do.
Yeah.
Because there is what's that bridge, that gap.
Yeah.
So, I think a bit of Who Let the Dads Out is your, I think, the church's clue as to what needs to be done to
yeah.
bring people in, right?
Yeah.
There is no religious aspect of that morning.
Yeah.
Maybe a Sunday morning, maybe other times of the day may help.
Whoa.
And a bit more. I mean, if you were, just a thought that's just come into my mind in terms of trying to get people in, as me, as a business kind of point of view, if you were to offer childcare from 3:30 to 6:30, from Monday to Friday, right?
Yeah, listen.
Right?
Yeah. Dreams are dreams.
There's yeah. all sorts of legal insurance issues around that.
But I want to bring someone else in.
Yeah, okay. If you were to be opening the door between 3:30, 6:30, and some way of getting the kids from here to school, all the whole room's got, oh, my word, my prayers have been answered. I've got childcare.
Okay. Can I cut you off there, Chris? Because I want to bring somebody else in. In a sense, Chris, I think very strongly we as a church are already engaged in things, or actually what I want to, yeah, I'll say a bit more about this at some other point, but we are, thank you for taking so long to just to come round to the fact that I'm an attractive person. That's really lovely of you. And I was going to say something actually really important, and it's gone.
Humble as well.
And it was about I'll try and remember something. I mean, that's very, very helpful, Chris, thank you. Someone over here. Yes, Ian. If we can just keep really, really brief comments now, that would be really helpful.
I was very interested in what gentleman said over here. Martin, I think his name is.
Chris, sorry.
Hundreds and thousands of young men are playing football on Sunday morning. Hundreds and thousands of them. Sunday football leagues and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If we did move the church service to the afternoon... all these guys could come and give thanks for the fact they won in the morning.
Yeah.
So I really think there is something in that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ian. I mean, that's one aspect. So what we're doing there is we're moving what we're doing to another time so that they can come. There are others, which is perfectly acceptable and good. There's another way of doing it, which is actually to say, actually, some of us go to the football pitch. And that's what St Andrew's Chorley Wood did. Some very good, close, one of my best friends is involved, was involved with Connect Church, which used to go on a Sunday morning to the football pitch, serve teas and coffees and so on and so forth, and say, hey, we've got a meeting going on here shortly. So there are ways and means. Some of this is to do with what we're already doing. Some of it is new. Is Kerry? Sean?
Put on Chris.
Microphone, Sean, please.
Continuing on really what was the discussion here was also about preconceptions, preconceived ideas,
yeah.
Ours and theirs.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to change our preconceptions, how we're going to be approached, how we're going to be accepted if we start discussing
yes.
things religious, faith yes. and Christ.
Yes.
But also, we've got to somehow change other people's preconceptions. Yes. He said, nobody would consider you to be a man of the cloth on outward appearance. That's because they've got preconceived ideas of what yeah. a man of the cloth should look like and, yeah. And behave. We've got to change that.
Yes.
So it's an all attitude
of us have got to change that.
We've got to change,
not just me.
And we've got to change what we expect from other people as well.
All of us have got to change that. We've got to change our language. We've got to change our behaviour and so on and so forth. What I was going to say from Chris's point, Chris was saying, if you remember, you know, we offer childcare from 3:30 to 6:30. Well, I'll tell you what, Chris, we don't even have to do that because it's already happening. I invite you folks to come on a Wednesday afternoon or a Friday afternoon between 4 and 9 o'clock. This place is rammed with people. Children all over the place, parents all over the place. And so I'd say to you, Chris, that actually it's not that we have to even start something new, but we have to access things that are already there. What if some of us members came along on a Wednesday afternoon for 3 or 4 hours and said, I'm going to serve these people coffee. I'm going to come along, I'm going to talk to them, I'm going to chat to them, I'm going to get to know them. They're going to know that I'm a representative of the church. What if the mission field is already there? And how do we make that part of the mission? How do we make that part of the church? Linda.
Well, going on from that point, one of the things we spoke about was people in crisis.
Yes.
And getting the chance to just offer to pray for them.
Lovely.
But without preaching to them.
Lovely.
And the other point we had is a radical change to the house groups.
Yep.
So perhaps keep some house groups for the mature Christians.
Yep.
But most of our house groups are totally inadequate for a new person coming in.
Yep.
And they're too closed and they're too intimidating. So how can we have groups that we can actually ask our friends to, where we're not just talking about biblical things, we're talking about all sorts of things.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. I was reading somewhere, I was at, Latimer Minster, just down the road. They've got lots of little groups, and they have three aspects of all of their groups, which we've talked about before. Looking up, worship. Looking in, pastoral fellowship, care. But looking out. And they're required as small groups to be missional, to think missionally. How can we not just keep this to ourselves, but how can we make this group part of the church's mission? And sometimes those small groups grow into a little church. And why not? And why not? One or two more. Where's the microphone? Hilary, you've been wanting to speak. Yeah.
In our group, we didn't get anywhere at all because we just talked about lots of things. But I think I would just say we have to be careful about red herrings of let's change the morning service, let's do this, because until the people are here,
yeah.
And I think sometimes if new blood comes in, it would evolve, things would evolve, because we're not going to attract people to the service by changing the service because they aren't attracted to the service anyway.
Yeah.
But what we talked about mainly was relationship. That we, the church, have to go out and be Jesus and make relationship with people. And that might be through serving tea and coffees. That might be... We talked, I think, one time about serving tea and coffees at the station to the commuters. There's all sorts of things like that that we have to get out there and make relationship with people. So house groups, we did talk about that, all that sort of thing, great. Yeah. But first of all, where are the people? We've got to make relationship.
Yeah. Okay. Now, oh, Ian, and can I, Jana, are you, is that your hand up? Okay, Ian, and then Jana, and then we'll, if anyone has got any burning, we're going to come back to it, but if anyone's got any burning sort of, then we'll take that. Ian.
My observation looking at that list is we're still a one-speed church. We're not dealing with mixed economies on that list.
No. Well,
No, let me finish, please, if I may. Because where we need to be on mixed economies is in parallel with that. And yes. All of that is good, and all of that change is desirable.
Yeah.
But we need to get that mixed economy going. How do we do that? We need to start home churches as well in parallel with this, that start off with Sunday barbecue clubs with our friends, where we start off talking maybe a bit of faith for 5 minutes 1 week, and then we increase it to 10 minutes the next week, and eventually over time, so that we bring people in at the very basic level, beginner's level, and we grow them.
Friendship.
Yeah, you start with a basic friendship, talk a little bit about faith, and you grow them over time. You know, I think certainly as we mentioned, house groups, we expect people to come in and start talking at very high theological levels, which we discuss at house groups. These people aren't ready for that. We need to be starting a mixed economy, starting home churches in parallel to the main church.
Excellent. Thank you, Ian. Jana.
Linking back to the first word you said on your bit about Joshua, about courage, four of my friends are coming to Alpha and have been to the first supper and have been to the second one and are so excited about this group that we're forming to discuss life and faith. One of them in particular, at every opportunity at the moment, wants to have a discussion about God and about faith. And one of the things that was said at the first Alpha Supper was talking about they need to know what they're rejecting. And I think that's what we're not very good at, as actually what is it that we believe. And it's that courage to actually be able to share, this is what faith is to me. And that they were like, oh, okay, so yeah, I've rejected this idea of God, but actually that isn't what I'm rejecting. I want to know what it is I'm rejecting. And I think it's that we need to have courage to speak to friends about Jesus. And I know that's really, really basic. I have one group of friends that I wouldn't even have dreamt of inviting to the Alpha course, and they've been my close friends for most of the 10 years I've been here. But I just think it's those people that we pray and ask God and say, who are the people that are our little catchment, and what's my responsibility in having courage to speak to my friends, and then corporately we can see God do amazing things with that courage. And it was really scary. Because I didn't want my really good friends to say no. Mm. I'll be honest on that. Mm.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. I'm going to have to draw stumps there. But there'll be plenty more conversation to have. And I believe from your response that's got things stimulated. Let me just draw to a conclusion. Lou asked at the end of our last meeting a couple of weeks ago, she said, how do we get our leadership from God about how to do this best? And that's such an important question. This last Wednesday at our prayer meeting, when we were praying around these sort of issues, these sort of questions, Steve started off by reading some verses from Proverbs and the wisdom literature. And as we were praying, a verse was brought back to my memory, and I think another verse was brought to my mind. The verse I was reminded of is this verse from Proverbs 24. By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. And that verse wasn't actually brought to my mind, but what was brought to my mind is the last person who brought it to me, saying they believe this is what God was saying to the church, and that was Noel Taylor. I'd only been here about 3 weeks, and he said, I've never done this before, Andy, but can I come and see you, because I think God has given me a verse for this church. And so we met together, and it was that verse, and it was brought back to my mind on Wednesday evening in our time of prayer. How do we go forward in this? Wisdom. God's wisdom. And through understanding it's established. Noel really believes this for our church. That one day our rooms will be filled with rare and beautiful treasures. And those are people. He really believes that for us. But if we're going to do that, it's got to be through wisdom. Through understanding. God's wisdom. And through his understanding. The other verse that I believe the Spirit brought into my mind was this verse from John 21 about fishing. We talked about fishing, didn't we, a lot? And how we go about fishing. And this verse, this passage came to my mind. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples didn't realize that it was Jesus. And he called out to them, "Friends, haven't you caught any fish?" Do you feel a bit like that as a church? When was the last time we caught some fish? And he said, Jesus says, "Friends, haven't you caught any fish?" And they said, "No." So Jesus said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." How do we do this? We talk to Jesus about it. We keep our eyes on the Ark of the Covenant, on the presence of God, because we've never been this way before. What is God saying to us? Where is Jesus leading us? And will we hear him and listen to him and obey him when he says, "Cast your nets on the other side"? And I come back to what you were saying, Chris, because actually they were fishermen. And they were doing the stuff. But they just hadn't caught anything. They weren't quite doing it right or in the right place or in the right way. So Jesus comes along and says, "Carry on what you're doing, but do it this way." And I tell you, if Jesus does that amongst us, we will then say, "This is God. God is with us." Is that right? So in answer to Lou's question, the answer is wisdom and insight from God. I don't know how to do this. No, I don't have the answers. We've got some great ideas here, but I don't know the way forward. Yeah, and I'm terrified too, but I'm excited. So how do we do it? I really do know someone who has the answers. And he's the same one who told his disciples to cast their nets on the other side. So in order to move forward, I'll just drop this and then we're going to watch a video to end. We can go and get some coffee if you like. What do we need to do? We need to remember our calling. We need to remember Jesus said, "Go and make disciples." We need to remember our New Testament roots and what God did by his Spirit through a motley crew of 12 disciples. And believe that what he did then, he can do in us and through us today. We need to appreciate our recent heritage. And we're celebrating 175 this year, and I think that's important. But we must be willing to shed the trappings of the past whilst remaining true to the gospel. And we need to, and this is really important, we need to listen prayerfully to the community. Because we could spend a generation answering a question that nobody is asking. And I had a fascinating conversation at Toddlers on Wednesday morning with someone who we know really well. And between you and me, she's got a really bizarre belief. She talks to the universe, prays to the universe. But I'll tell you what, it's not that odd. In fact, I hear it a lot. And she said, "Oh, I believe in something. I just don't believe in the Christian God." She used to go to church. Her mum's very involved in a church. "I just don't believe in the Christian God. Bible's full of error. Da, 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 da." She said, "But I pray." Funny, she said to me, "I pray for a parking space. But I pray to the universe. It's the universe that gives me a parking space." And I said to her, "Does your knowledge of the something and your experience of the something, does that encourage you and urge you to want to know more about the something? She said, "Oh, no. No, I don't need to know anymore." I find that fascinating. I challenge you. I bet this was new to me. In fact, it wasn't new. It was the second time I've heard it. That someone who believes in something, but their belief in something doesn't then urge them on to want to know that something more. They're just, it just doesn't matter. This was new to me. And I bet if it's new to me, it's new to you. So this listening to the community is really, really important because they've got some wild and wacky and interesting ideas. They really have. And our problem is that we're constantly giving them the answer. But it's not an answer to the question they're asking. So we've got to find new ways. It's terrifying. I don't know. I haven't got the answers. But I know someone who has. And I know someone who loves them more than I do. So we've got to prayerfully listen to the community. And we've got to dream dreams. Can a small body of 45 people really? Really? Can we make a difference? Really? Of course we can. But we've got to dream new dreams. We've got to seek fresh vision from God. And lastly, we've got to go for it. We've just got to do it. With faith and hope, bravery and courage, humility and gentleness, using all the means at our disposal, but that we might see his kingdom come and lives transformed to the glory of God. We've just got to do it. And I take us back to Joshua. The promise is there. We've got to consecrate ourselves. We've got to keep close to God. And then there's the assurance, obedience, readiness, expectation, and courage.